King of the Harem Heaven, Chapter 10. Of the dozens of Israelite daughters with whom the red-bearded prophet amused himself throughout the early years of his reign, two girls, Esther Johnson and Hazel Ruth Wade, eventually played the most important roles in the explosive climax of his fantastic career. Strangely enough, neither of the two was ever actually a harem favorite. Esther was a shrewd, highly capable, highly trusted assistant and personal secretary who went on to play the part of a House of David hatchet girl in many of Ben Purnell's later times of trouble. Hazel Ruth was a superbly skilled evangelist, capable of breaking a potential convert's heart with her beautiful hymn-singing voice and her convincing soft-throated preaching. Benjamin Franklin Purnell saw immediately that both could be extremely valuable to him. He would learn later that both could be dangerous. Esther Johnson was a pretty little Swedish girl, slim and pert and quick-witted. Her father was a California tailor, who brought his son and four daughters to the colony the first year of its existence, leaving his invalid wife behind, intending to send for her the moment he was settled. He dutifully turned in all his money, and Esther's mother remained in California until her death. King Ben had little use for invalids in his kingdom. The bearded king noticed Esther immediately, noticed her quick to learn mind and her crisp speaking voice. All of the colony children were lectured regularly on the sacred writings, including Ben's own. It was, in fact, the only schooling they ever received. But for the Johnson girl, King Ben ordered a great deal of special tutoring, an extensive course on every phase of Israelite doctrine. In 1904, when she was only 14, she was already doing missionary work, touring the country in one of many House of David covered wagons along with three older flying roller preachers. At this point, she firmly believed Ben Purnell was a divine being. It was the following year that he disillusioned her. They were aboard the House of David schooner, Rising Sun, at the time. It was Ben's habit, in pleasant weather, to ride his ship up to his timber cutting tract, and then to picnic on the beach while the boat was being loaded, invariably with a dozen or so teenage girls for company. Just back from a missionary tour, 15-year-old Esther was delighted when she was invited along on one of these outings. But on a return trip, as the king's son bathed on a couch on deck, two of his favorites whispered something in his ear and pointed to Esther. He called her over. "The other girls think it's about time you were initiated in the inner mystic circle," he told her, laughing. There had been wine along at that picnic. Esther had been shocked to learn. Ben had gulped down a great deal himself and even given it to the several of the girls. "Into what?" "They think it's time your blood was purified." "How?" she asked cautiously. The girls clustered around the king's couch were giggling steadily. "Well," he smiled at her, "you might start by taking your clothes off." She stared at him in startled disbelief, then glanced about her. They were on the roof deck, out of sight of the long-haired crew members or the Israelite men returning from work assignments in the lumber camp.
"Here?
Why not? Are you afraid to undress in front of the other girls, Esther?"
"Well, no, but..."
"Oh, I see," he scowled suddenly. "Then it's me." His voice was low and ominous. "Tell me, Esther, do you think of me as a mere mortal man?"
"No," she said quickly. "Of course not. Of course I don't."
Doubting Ben's divinity was the most serious crime an Israelite could commit. "Do you understand the true faith, Esther?"
"I think I do."
"Are you willing to be tried, to sacrifice everything for the faith?"
"I think I am."
"Do you know how to attain immortality?"
"By living in the true faith and adhering to its commandments."
"That isn't always enough, Esther. You see, you lived in the outside world for many years before you came here. Evil is everywhere there, and you cannot help but have your blood tainted. Then, too, you could go into the outside world again and again in search of converts, talking to unbelievers regularly. This is why your blood must be cleansed. My blood is different from the blood of mortal men. My blood is absolutely pure. Only by sowing the seeds of purity in your body and making your blood pure can I be sure of giving you immortality."
The young girl stood there silent and confused.
"Now take off your clothes, Esther." His voice was still kindly, but a note of firmness had come into it. As though he'd been patient enough in his explanation and wanted his commands obeyed instantly now. Sudden revulsion welled up inside Esther Johnson.
"No!" she gasped, terrified at the very thought of disobeying the divine messenger. with the cluster of harem girls watching him closely to see how he'd answer such outrageous disobedience. Ben Purnell didn't hesitate. In sudden anger, he jumped up from the couch, grabbed Esther, carried her to the rail, and held her over the side, high above the deep, dark water of Lake Michigan, which moved swiftly past below. He held her there for a full half minute, while she screamed and begged for her life. Then he carried her back and tossed her roughly on that couch. "Now you have just one more chance to do as you're told," he threatened her. Sick with fear, sobbing steadily, she disrobed completely and was forced to submit to him with all the other girls looking on. As a member of the inner circle, Esther was ordered to leave the shack where her father and brother and sisters were quartered and to move into one of the small rooms that sited Ben's royal apartment on the second floor of Shiloh. As she gradually became accustomed to the life that was prescribed for her, King Ben put her to work in the business office downstairs. Since a great majority of the Israelites were very simple-minded people, there were few Ben could trust with important assignments. More and more, he came to depend on the young Johnson girl. Just a few months after he first seduced her, he sent her to England on a highly delicate mission. "First thing after you get off the boat," he ordered her, "you go see this Lizzie Tomlinson. She must turn to the true faith and join the ingathering. This is very important." "Why is anyone's soul so important?" she asked, trying to rationalize reality with the theories of the sacred writings. King Ben stared at her a moment, then decided to be frank with her. "This one's soul's worth about $20,000, and we could use it. Carrying on the Lord's work can be expensive, you know." "Oh. When you've got the Tomlinson woman converted," he went on, "you're to call on this Mr. Corey. He's in charge of what's left of the Fifth Kingdom and whatever money and property the English branch of the old Rohite Church has left. I want you to convince him it's his duty to turn everything into the Seventh Kingdom." "How?" Esther asked. "How?" He stared at her a moment, then laughed softly. "Purify his blood for him. You have to be ready to sacrifice anything for the true faith. Don't worry, I'll absolve you of any sin." The girl blushed. "Suppose he's too old to be affected that way?" "Too old," King Ben snorted. "No man's too old. If I ever get too old, you can personally give me a drug and put me out of my misery. Now get going or you'll miss your boat. And don't let your missionary zeal run away with you and convert a bunch of paupers to bring back here. The Seventh Kingdom simply cannot endure against the evil in the world if it weakens itself by trying to support half of the riffraff of the world." Ben Purnell eventually had to go into the English courts to get the remaining Fifth Church funds from Mr. Corey. But the Johnson girl did succeed in bringing back the Tomlinson woman and the $20,000. And as the years went by, Esther became more and more of a girl Friday to her king in running the intricate affairs of the House of David. Always in the sincere belief, ingrained from childhood, that the various despicable things she was forced to do would benefit the true faith and the Seventh Kingdom in the end. She arranged secret burials for those who died from sickness after Ben Purnell refused to waste money on doctors. She talked rebellious young harem members who were trying to flee the colony into first signing statements testifying to the purity of the conduct of their king. She even obtained such a statement from her own sister, Lena. On one typical assignment, she arranged a compromising situation for a girl Ben Purnell feared would talk, luring her into a hotel room, trapping her there with a married Israelite man, and hiring photographers to record a manufactured indiscretion. Once she even turned her appealing young charms on a governor of Michigan in an attempt to talk him out of a threatened state investigation on the House of David. In carrying out her duties as a confidential secretary, she was skilled and deadly, but a time would come when King Ben would foolishly turn her against him, and as an enemy, she would prove just as deadly. Hazel Ruth Wade was 2 years younger than Esther Johnson. Her father, Richard T. Wade, had once been the sheriff of Wichita County, Kansas, but he'd settled down on an Oklahoma farm after marrying a girl named Leonora, an extremely religious girl so opposed to violence that she'd ordered him to lay aside his six guns and to give up his career as a law enforcer if he wanted her for a wife. Years later, on a pleasure trip to the St. Louis World's Fair, she seen the House of David sideshow, taken the literature home to study, then written in asking for more information. King Ben had sent August Boschke to convert the family. "What are you planting apple trees for?" Boschke scoffed at their farm. "The end of the world's coming in just 2 years." "You'll never pick those apples, brother,"
You'd best hurry to the ingathering of Israel and save yourself and your family. Both the former sheriff and his oldest daughter, Edna, were cautious and suspicious, but Leonora Wade embraced the Israelite faith instantly and wholeheartedly. With her three other daughters, Hazel Ruth, Cletus, and Dorothy, and her son Hayden, she followed a Bearded missionary back to the Benton Harbor colony in 1904. I remember when I first saw the House of David, Hazel Ruth, 12 years old at the time, wrote years later. We came past Jerusalem and past the arch, and the lawns were green and beautiful. The band was lined up out in front. Queen Mary was waiting on the steps of Shiloh to greet us. Then King Benjamin came out and stood beside her. He was all dressed in white, and doves were swarming about his head and landing on his shoulders. Why, I thought I was going right into the gates of paradise. Her father and her older sister Edna followed, to try to talk her mother into returning. Ben Purnell went to work on the former sheriff and almost persuaded him to join the colony. Richard Wade even sold his farm and brought the money to Benton Harbor. It was in talking finances that King Ben lost this convert. My girl Edna ain't gonna join no matter what anyone says to her, Wade informed the long-haired prophet. We got $14,000 altogether. What do you figure I ought to give Edna? Why give her anything? Ben asked. Well, you know, Richard Wade shrugged, a man always tries to leave his kids something. You mean when he dies? Yeah. Well, if you live in the true faith, brother, you're never gonna die. So why give the girl anything? This greediness on the part of a supposed divine being made the former sheriff suspicious again, and he decided against entering the colony. He rented a house in downtown Benton Harbor instead and lived there with his daughter Edna. When his wife demanded half of their money, he gave it to her, even though he knew it would be promptly turned into King Ben. Then for 5 long years, he stayed on in the city, trying to get Leonora to come back to him. Finally, in 1909, he gave up and left the state. In the meantime, at the age of 14, Hazel Ruth was initiated into Ben Purnell's inner mystic circle. She left the crude shack assigned to her family and moved into one of the many little rooms that completely surrounded the Royal Shiloh apartment. On the first night, King Ben came in to sit on the edge of her bed. Do you like it here, Ruth? Yes. She was shaking with nervousness at being so close to a divine being. Are you studying the true faith? She nodded. She'd been attending the only school in the colony, the class held in the tabernacle across the street in which the sacred writings were read aloud to the children. Have you been told anything at all about blood purification? He asked softly. When she shook her head, he began explaining clearly and concisely all of the theory behind the old Roythe doctrines. But when he attempted to put the theory into practice and began pulling off her nightgown, she broke out crying and kicked and shoved him away. He left her alone for the rest of that night, but he locked the door as he went out. The next morning, however, Hazel Ruth managed to slip out of Shiloh and run back through the woods to her mother's little cottage. Choking and breathing hard, she told what had happened. "You'll burn in hell if you talk that way," Leonora Wade warned her daughter, sending the other children out of hearing. "Don't you realize King Ben's not a mortal man? How could he possibly do anything like that? You must have just had a nightmare. Now enough of this. I'm taking you back to Shiloh, and you pay attention to what King Benjamin says and behave yourself. Otherwise, you'll burn in hell. I'm warning you." Forcibly returned to the harem quarters by her own mother, Hazel Ruth still remained stubborn. King Ben merely let the environment work on her for a while, giving her a reasonable chance to realize that all the girls were doing it. He put an older harem girl with her as a roommate. He even cleansed the blood of other girls in her presence. But when several weeks had gone by and she still remained unclaimed, he came into her room one evening, ordered her roommate out, then tore off her clothing in grim silence. Slapping her soundly and repeatedly until she submitted to his sexual invasion of her virginal body. As was often the case with newcomers, Hazel Ruth was the red-bearded prophet's favorite for some time, and he treated her very much as a child treats a new toy. He often talked baby talk to her. Each evening he would sit her on his knee and have her read his newspaper to him. Eventually he grew tired of her and became absorbed in other new additions to the inner mystic circle, among them her kid sister Cletus. It was then that he sent Hazel Ruth out on her first missionary tour.
Since jobs for teenage girls were extremely scarce in that era, this was the most profitable use King Ben could make of them, at the same time relieving able-bodied men from preaching duty so they could work at full-time jobs to enrich their king. Most of the young girls were hopelessly poor evangelists and served only to attract a crowd to the camp meetings held beside the covered wagons, so that Israelite elders could do the real work. But young Hazel Ruth developed a knack for this sort of work. Like Esther Johnson, Hazel Ruth Wade was small and pretty. Otherwise, they were opposites in every way. Where Esther was sharp-featured and sharp-tongued, Hazel Ruth was soft-voiced and round-faced, her beauty childlike and dimpled. Her most striking gift was her singing voice, rich and husky, appealing and sincere. She learned to do as much with a hymn as torch singers do with blues songs. In addition, her preaching was fresh and sparkling, and she became the House of David star performer in the field, attracting converts like flies. On tour, she was billed as Salvation Nell. Returning to Bent Harbor after each period of proselytizing, she would be given a room at Shiloh, and her king would promptly see that her blood was re-cleansed of any taint she might have picked up on the road. Then, following a short stretch of harem duty, she'd be sent out on tour in the covered wagon again. For 4 full years, this was the life she led. Her mother, Leonora Wade, still living in that crude shack with the 2 youngest children, came down with pneumonia in 1910 and grew steadily worse. Her older sister, Edna, married now but still living in Benton Harbor, learned about this and wrote to her father, who was working on a farm in Indiana. Rushing to his wife's side, Richard Wade found her lying unattended with just one thin blanket over her. He found the small drafty cottage heated only by a little wood-burning cook stove, its temperature scarcely above freezing. But Leonora was undisturbed. "Don't worry, dear," she smiled happily. "I've been keeping the true faith. I believed in King Benjamin and done everything he said. How could I possibly die? It's you we must think of, dear. Please now join the ingathering before it's too late." The former sheriff of Wichita hurried out to bring back warm bedding and a new stove. He called a doctor in and stayed with his wife day and night, fighting for her life. But it was much too late. Weakened by the cheap Israelite diet, chilled incessantly through the long Michigan winter, Leonora lived just 5 days longer. Richard Wade turned silently away from her body and strode directly through the snow-fogged woods and across the road to the main office at Shiloh. A tall, thin man who still wore a wide-brimmed Western hat. With his face expressionless and his voice soft and low, he asked to see Ben Purnell. But there was something frightening about his apparent lack of emotion, and Executive Secretary Francis Thorpe called Esther Johnson. "Better get Salvation Nell down here," he whispered. "He's asking for Benjamin." King Ben's girl Friday hurried up to the second floor, coached Hazel Ruth Wade carefully, urged her to talk her father out of causing any trouble, and then sent her down. "King Benjamin isn't even in the colony right now," Hazel Ruth insisted. "Besides, you can't possibly blame him for what's happened. If Mother had really lived in a true faith, if she'd honestly believed in him like she said she did, nothing could have..." "You listen a minute, girl," the former sheriff interrupted her. "I'm taking Hayden and Dorothy out of here right now. That's all the room I got in the buggy. But I'll be back after you and Cletus tomorrow, and you be ready." "I can't leave the House of David." Hazel Ruth was terrified at the thought. "Don't you realize what's coming, Father? Why, once the millennium begins and the books are sealed, this will be the only safe refuge on the face of the earth. I'll show you in the Bible." "Never mind," her father shook his head slowly. "You be ready tomorrow. You see that Cletus is ready too. And Hazel Ruth?" He waved his hand contemptuously at several bearded men who stared cautiously at him from the far side of the office. "You do these long-haired fellas a favor and tell them to keep out of my way, huh?" His face still looked vacant and expressionless as he left. But once the initial shock of his wife's death wore off, rage ran deep and feverish in Richard Wade. He left his 2 youngest children with his daughter Edna, went home to Indiana, strapped on beneath his coat the twin revolvers he'd saved but hadn't worn since his days in Wichita, then came back looking for Ben Purnell. Meanwhile, the moment he'd left the colony, his daughter Hazel Ruth had been rushed to a meeting at which Queen Mary and Cora Mooney were presiding. Some 20 other harem girls were there, but the king himself was not to be seen. The 2 women explained that there might be trouble,
that if the authorities were called in, the girls might even be subjected to medical examinations. For this reason, it was bluntly announced King Benjamin was ordering them all to get married. Having taken this precaution, if examinations were made, he could simply blame their husbands. The girls were ordered to choose the names of Israelite boys and to write them down, also listing second choices. "I don't know any boys," Hazel Ruth Wade complained. Because of her missionary tours and stays in the harem quarters of Shiloh, she'd had little contact with the rest of the colony. "Surely you remember the names of some boys from school," Cora Mooney, now the official high priestess of Shiloh, urged her. The girl thought back a full 6 years. "Well, there was a boy named Ray Hombach who sat next to me." Mary Purnell, standing nearby, shook her head. "Ray Hombach has already been chosen." "Come on now, child," Cora Mooney prodded her impatiently. "You must remember some others. Benjamin has ordered that you be married. If you can't think of anyone, we'll choose someone for you ourselves." The 18-year-old girl shook her head. "I can remember the names Irving Smith and William Fry, but I can't even remember what they looked like." "All right," Cora Mooney called another older flying roller woman. "Check those two. See if either of them's willing to marry little Salvation Nell here. If not, tell one of them it's a direct commandment from Benjamin, and see that you have him at the justice's office in a half an hour." Not until Hazel Ruth Wade stood before the justice of the peace, who was giving the Israelites a special rate of 50 cents a couple for these mass production marriages, did she learn who her husband would be. As it turned out, she got Irving Smith. Cora Mooney took the newlyweds aside while other couples were being rapidly united. "Benjamin wants you to escort Salvation Nell on her next missionary tour," she told the perplexed boy. "You're to leave today, immediately. And remember now, you two, this is a marriage in name only. You're both to observe the virgin law strictly, or you'll suffer the consequences. You understand that these are Benjamin's personal commandments?" Seven other pairs were united in meaningless marriages that day and 13 the next. At the same time, Esther Johnson was rushing Cletus Wade and several other Inner Mystic Circle members who were still under the legal marriageable age out of town, registering them under fictitious names in a large Chicago hotel. King Ben had ordered her to keep them out of sight until further notice. When former Sheriff Wade arrived back at the House of David, determined to test the long-haired prophet's claimed immortality with the .45 slug, Cora Mooney waved a certificate of marriage in his face. "She's Hazel Smith now," Ben's loyal high priestess announced curtly. "You have no further claim on her." Richard Wade studied the document in silence, then crumpled it up and dropped it on the floor of the Shiloh office. "You get my girl, Cletus, out here right quick," he ordered softly, "and I want to see Ben Purnell too." "Cletus is off in the east doing missionary work," Cora Mooney insisted, "and Benjamin isn't even in the country right now. He's, sailing for England on a new preaching tour." The former sheriff stared at her a moment, then shrugged. "Reckon I'll see for myself." He pushed on past her and started for the stairs. A long-haired pillar tried to block his way. Wade caught the man's coat front and beard in both hands, lifted him completely off his feet, and tossed him back to crash sprawling across one of the desks. Then he went on up to search the second floor. Ignoring the angry shouts below and the shrieks of the girls whose bedrooms he invaded. But he found the royal apartment deserted, and although most of the newly married Inner Circle members had been promptly returned to the royal harem quarters, neither Cletus nor Hazel Ruth was among them. "Where are the Wade girls?" he demanded again and again. But the frightened young ladies of Shiloh merely cowered in the corners and shook their heads. His rage beginning to show in his face, he stalked back down the stairs and through the office. "You'd better get out of here quick," Cora Mooney stamped at him as he went past her, slamming out the front door and hurrying past the arch toward Jerusalem. A dozen or more young flying roller men were waiting for him on the lawn, heavy clubs in their hands. Richard Wade stopped, unbuttoned and pushed back his coat, then kept on going. The group broke apart, watched him in silence as he kicked open the door of Jerusalem. Inside, two more of the king's lieutenants blocked his way. One of them even nervously pointed a small pocket revolver at him. His coattails still pushed back, the former sheriff bore down on them. You got about 2 seconds to either go ahead and try something or else step out of the way, he warned. They moved aside and he strode through the building on another room-to-room search, probing every corner and closet of the Pillar's apartments, ignoring their indignant protests. But his daughters were not there, and neither was the bearded king. He's somewhere here, all right, he shouted at Queen Mary. I'll find him no matter how long it takes. But she merely stared through him in haughty, frozen-faced silence. Out across the street and through the woods he went, pounding on the doors of the Israelite shacks, forcing his way into each of them, his face so dark with anger now that no one tried to stop him. He searched the colony again and again, hour after hour. He threatened the bearded pillars vehemently, shoved and slapped them around, trying desperately to give his rage an outlet by provoking a fight. But it was all useless. The entire house of David resisted him in passive silence, and there was no sign of his daughters, no sign of Ben Purnell. He was back the next day and the day after that. He stayed on in Benton Harbor for weeks, storming into the colony at irregular hours, sometimes in the middle of the night, hoping for a glimpse of his girls or an opportunity to take a shot at the long-haired monarch. He finally went to the local authorities, only to find them strongly reluctant to interfere in internal Israelite affairs. If your girl Cletus prefers to live with her married sister, there's nothing much we can do about it, he was told. I don't know what you expect when you haven't seen her in years. The people out there say they're off together doing missionary work and that they've already told you they don't want to leave the colony. So your wife died of pneumonia there. That's too bad. But people die of pneumonia everywhere. You just gotta realize that these people have the same right to practice their own religion as anyone else. Richard T. Wade, the former gunslinging sheriff of Wichita who'd faced down and bested innumerable varieties of bad men in his day, finally admitted to himself that he was beaten. Beaten by a strange brand of outlaw who couldn't be forced to fight. A short time later, he returned to Indiana, taking Dorothy and Hayden with him, making a new home for them there. Not until 17 years later, sitting in a courtroom, testifying and hearing the testimony of others, would he learn where Ben Purnell had been hiding all this time? In the Big House of David sideshow tent at the Chicago's World Fair. Esther Johnson and Hazel Ruth Wade were just two of the dozens and eventually hundreds who served time in the second floor rooms of Shiloh. The stories later told in court by the long-haired prophet's girl Friday and his star evangelist Salvation Nell were just two single threads in the many-storied fabric of his life and reign. But if Benjamin Franklin Purnell had really been the prophet he claimed to be, if he'd actually been able to foretell the future, he'd have gone ahead and tossed Esther overboard that day on the rising sun, and he'd have left Hazel Ruth with her mother in that colony shack. For these two young ladies were destined to give King Ben more trouble than all the rest of the girls he'd debauched combined.